It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
You heard it, folks. This is a rare day. We've been telling you that Joey's sitting in once in a while when Adam's gone. And I also mentioned once that we're going to do some shows with the whole contingent here. This is the first one. So I'm looking forward to all of that. And as you all know, Joey and Adam are partners in Strivus Wealth Partners, which is what used to be Van Wee Financial, only more so, same place and so on, but our offerings are dramatically higher, and yeah, there's just a lot to learn yet. So it's coming along very nicely. Everybody's happy, I believe, and we're all made a little happier by the events in the market this week that we will get into very shortly.
Joey just wanted to come along and deliver the good news.
Yeah, exactly. That's
right. Yeah. I've only had one or two chances to do that. So.
Yeah. That's the truth.
I usually stick them with the bad weeks.
Well, I got more to say about that, but it's not important.
It's weird how the soccer calendar just follows bad market behavior.
Well, Adam has always claimed that he does his best work when he's out of town.
That actually brings me to something. I never made the announcement, but I am officially retired as a soccer dad.
Wow.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a better sweet moment.
I know.
If I'd known, I would have brought flowers or something.
Maybe champagne.
Yeah, could have traded that in for tuition payments and things like that.
Oh, for sure.
You can run, but you can't hide. Back to welcoming our old-timers, so to speak. Those who were always here, we appreciate it. We're into our 11th year now doing this show, and it just keeps moving along. We're having more fun than a human being or three has a right to have. If you're new to the show, try to stick around for the whole hour. We always promise you, you'll learn something and maybe even something useful. And we also remind people that if you're afraid to get on the radio, which you shouldn't be because we don't bite, but if you are, you can mail it in to info@strivuswealth.com and we'll get it answered. If we don't get it by the end of the show, we'll get it next week for certain. Now, with all of that said, it was a wonderful week, and I'll let the boys tell you all about it as soon as I mention that we will have a trivia question right after the break, so of course be listening for that, and the lines are open, 904-222-8255. That said, take it away.
Yep, will do. It was a really, really good week. In fact, when I sat down to do the numbers, I didn't even realize how good of a week it was. It was an incredibly good week. It didn't feel like that, though. It felt good, but not great. But it was great.
It really was.
Yeah. And the NASDAQ officially entered a new bull market, exited the bear market that it had been in for the past 113 days. That started on December 16th. The index then fell more than 20%, then had a rebound of more than 20%. And that 20% on the upside line was crossed on April 8th. That seems like a really short amount of time to be in a bear market, but on average, the NASDAQ bear markets last just 120 days, so almost right at the average. The median drop of 24.3 for this time was lower than than all of the bear markets on the NASDAQ, which that median is 32.3. We're only down 24.3 this time. Historically, when the NASDAQ enters a new bull market, the gains continue to come, with the next year sees gains of over 30% on average, which that doesn't even include the 20% off the bear market lows. So that's pretty incredible.
Wow.
The next 5 years have produced annualized gains of 14.5%. So if you typically, when you see a bear market in the NASDAQ and then you exit it, each of the following 5 years averages 14.5% gains. So if you think that the market is high, you may just want to not think about getting out right now.
Well, I'd also remind people that we have not set a new high in any of the indices yet.
No.
We're very close, but that's not the definition of getting out of a bear market.
That's right. That's right. We're actually, just to get a little more granular, on the Dow, we're 5.2% off the all-time high set on September 30th of last year. On the NASDAQ, we're 4.8% down off of the high from December 16th of last year, and the S&P is off just 3% from the high on February 19th of this year. So we're just below the all-time highs, but barely. So one of the reasons that we're so close to the all-time highs is that earnings season is wrapping up, and it's been pretty remarkable how well things have gone. There's been a lot of political and economic headwinds during this last quarter, and whatever analysts were saying was one thing, but I think the expectations of the market and the street were probably even lower than what analysts were thinking. And it hasn't been the case at all. Over 70% of companies beat on their earnings targets, and almost 65% beat on revenue targets. Forward guidance was a bit mixed. A lot of companies pulled their guidance this quarter. Not surprising. They all wanted to hedge because of the tariffs and to see what the outcome of that political situation was. Well, over all the companies that did give guidance, though, there were slightly more that raised than lowered, which that also I found pretty surprising considering all the headwinds that exist right now. Broken down by sector, industrials had the highest beat rate on earnings, but it was a little lower on revenue. Tech was second on earnings, but it had the highest revenue, so that could explain the rally in the NASDAQ. The other consumer staples had the lowest beat rate on both earnings and revenue, which is why you're not seeing that sector perform particularly well right now. So according to the New York Fed's household debt and credit report, almost 96% of all loans are up to date on payments. This number has been trending down since 2023, so going in the wrong direction, but that was from a record low during COVID. Overall, the current level of delinquencies is slightly better than historic norms. The most recent uptick, and it's been kind of a severe uptick, but there's a really easy explanation for all that. Student loan payments officially restarted in September of 2023, but late payments were not reported to credit agencies until October of 2024. So we're just now seeing those delinquencies on student loan payments starting to show up, and that is why you're seeing a lot of people say that delinquencies are rising right now.
If you don't talk about it, didn't happen.
Yeah, something like that. No, we just didn't really know about it. It just wasn't being reported, so there was no way to track the data unless you had visibility into the federal government repayment numbers, which we do not.
No, that system got so screwed up under Obama, it's going to take an act of Congress to get it.
The entire student loan, the way it's run, it's just a disaster. It's really bad.
There is, however, hope. There is a new head of the SBA, and I believe this might all blend together one day with some new people that actually know what they're doing. I'm a little bit optimistic about that and some other things, and we'll just kind of carry this on as soon as we take a short break and sell some goods. We'll be right back. This is the Ben Lee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
That didn't sound
good. No, that didn't sound good at all.
We got a microphone problem over there.
We'll get it fixed. Don't worry about it.
Not to worry. All right. Adam had an interesting comment, and it's based on the dichotomy, the difference between what's going on and what's been perceived in the public. And yeah, this whole Trump derangement syndrome is causing people to make some terrible decisions. And I don't understand why people don't just go back to living in the real world. But we watch it. But anyway, Adam's got a classic example of how this whole thing works.
Yeah, I think the reason we're talking about this is that the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey came out this week. And historically, it's been a very good indicator in where the country is sort of headed, because people's fears sometimes turn into realities and vice versa. And so it's something that's tracked pretty closely by people, economists and people who do what we do. And inflation expectations have really the survey is almost broken at this point, because if you look at what the expectations are, they're higher than where inflation actually is today. But that's not the problem. The problem is that if you split it out by political party, Democrat, Independent, Republican, you'll see that Republicans have slightly probably underestimated what inflation would be. It depends on what you look at. It might be right. It might be a little low. But on the flip side, Democrats and now independents have joined them. They are so far off by two or three times the actual inflation rate on guessing that where inflation is and where it's going. And so the average, when you do that, is higher, much higher than where inflation actually stands. And it's all broken down by expectations. And I think this is directly attributable to the internet.
Because I asked your mother yesterday what her 5 to 10 year inflation outlook was. And she came in with conservative people everywhere. Well, no higher than 2.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that partially can be attributed to we have seen less than 2 for many years now. Mm-hmm. I think that the world has changed a bit post-COVID, and we may see more of a historic normal that is between 2 and 3.
Yeah, well, I grew up on a 3% is perfect.
Me too.
Platform.
So I think that's probably a reasonable estimate. But right now, Democrats are putting at over 5, and independents are at about 4.5. And so that's not accurate. We're nowhere near that. In fact, things are trending in the other direction. We saw a CPI report this month come in at 2.3% year over year. And then we got another really surprising report from the PPI, the Producer Price Index. It came in at a decline of 0.5% for the month.
Against an estimate of plus 0.02.
Plus 0.2, yeah.
Plus 0.2.
Yeah, and prices for food, energy, trade services, and transportation and warehousing all fell, while services increased a bit.
And eggs are down 39% in a month.
Eggs are back to, like, normal prices, more or less.
I wanted to work that in before the trivia question because it's so germane to what's going on. You got to know that when things are this gloomy in people's minds, better days are coming, and they're coming soon. They're always wrong.
Yeah, although historically, if you look at the consumer sentiment survey, when it dips, it is almost always right before a recession. But now, who knows if that would even work as a predictor anymore because things are so political. And I really believe the internet just keeps your feed in whatever mindset you're in. It reinforces whatever thoughts you already have when you're on Twitter, when you're on Facebook, when you're on whatever it is, Instagram. It all just reinforces whatever your current beliefs are and makes you think that, oh, I am so right then.
Yep. And history tells a different story. All right. One of the things that people expect when they get a good financial advisor is that you touch on a lot of different areas, one of which was estate planning. Now, we are not estate planners. We are not lawyers, nothing like that. We are coordinators between your professionals and your money and your ideas and all of that. But we get involved in it, and we have to know a lot about it. And Adam had an occasion this week to just have such a case in the routine course of business. And I was going to talk about it a little bit this week anyway, and it just happened that it was pulled from real life, as it turned out. But how many people really expect that? Well, you might be surprised. 93% of clients expect estate planning services to be part of their interaction with their financial advisors. What percent actually receive that service? That's the question for today. 904-222-8255, by the way. And good morning, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent. You?
Just excellent, excellent. It's going to be hot, but excellent.
Toasty, yeah.
Yeah, toasty is right. Everyone, you know, everybody's looking at me like, can you bring a fan out here to the field? No. Hey, I want to tag on to what Adam was saying about people's expectations on inflation. And part of the thing that's driving that is you go to the store, and we buy a coffee out of Gainesville, and we go to a health food store for the coffee. And I bought my coffee last week, and they said, well, the price is going to go way up on this. You know, their beans are imported, okay? So, and then I was just listening during the commercial break, and the morning guy was talking about Walmart telling everybody expect higher prices because a lot of our stuff is brought in from overseas, okay? So a lot of this, people's fears about inflation are being driven by what they're hearing, you know?
Yep.
I mean, when they go to the store.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to pay more. You're going to pay more. So anyhow, that's my comment. But.
That's right. And that's exactly right. If everything that had been talked about from this administration over the past year was actually going to get implemented. But honestly, what I think the street is seeing right now is that, look, there's going to be tariffs, but everything's going to be accepted. So your phones won't get tariffed. There's so many examples of things that already have exceptions. Your microchips will get accepted. I mean, so at the end of the day, we're just gonna have to see how it plays out, but I don't think it's going to be this huge 5.5% inflationary bubble. And then also there could be a one-time price adjustment, but it's not going to be running at 9.3% year over year like it was in 2022.
I think
exactly. I think, we have to be brought down to earth with this tariff thing. I think it's all going to pretty much get settled except for the outliers. And there may be one or two people, you know, that way. I think one of the things that may affect people too is, and ultimately it is the ability of this government to come to a real consensus on a budget that does not allow the budget to increase year over year, yes, as they've been doing.
I agree.
Without cuts. So those are my comments. Yeah. I'll hang up and listen and enjoy the show.
You want to take a shot at the trivia, Bob?
6%.
Too low, but thank you for bracketing a bit. The world thanks you. Good to hear from you. Stay cool.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, that whole thing that's going on with the tariffs, it's got everybody so out of sorts. Read the book, The Art of the Deal, if you don't believe what's going on. And all we're doing is living that book right now. Look what just happened overseas. Look at all the stuff coming home here. Let's make them here and not pay any tariffs. Oh, there's an idea.
How about we make a goal of getting our AAA rated debt rating back? We just lost the last one, Moody's Cave, last night and downgraded us. So the reason behind that, look at our debt.
But look at this one. Do you think that timing has anything to do with anything but politics? Here's why I ask. It was just reported that from Inauguration Day to May 5th, our national debt increased by $37 billion. $37 billion.
Okay.
That was a decrease. The year before, when Biden was running the show, or whoever his successor was, or whatever, surrogate, it's a decrease of 92%.
From the last year of Biden's term?
Yeah. The exact same dates, the exact same period of time in the calendar, the whole thing. It's down 92%. And Moody's and S&P and what's the third? I can't remember. They all look at it and say, well, it's not getting better. In fact, one of them says it's getting worse. I cannot get the political thought out of my head when I see something like that.
Yeah,
now is not the time that would happen.
I would agree with that, but S&P cut theirs in 2011.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was like Obama
years? That was
Obama years.
It was like year seven of him.
And I don't think any of them are particularly trustworthy anyway. But
after 08, I don't think you could ever trust anything they say.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just telling people that it's going in the right direction. It's got a long ways to go. And you saw the negotiations in the House blow up Friday, I guess. There are 5 holdouts now. And some of them want to save more money. Some of them want to spend less money. Some want this. Some want that. A couple of them are holding out for bigger SALT deductions because they're from high-tax states. This is the process of making law. And believe me, it is truly no better than sausage.
The media just jumped all over that. Like, they're never going to get this done. Yeah. No, this is a compromise. That's how it works.
What has Johnson gotten done? Everything he said
everything,
he would.
Everything.
When has he gotten it done? By the time he said he would,
yeah,
at the last second. It's his style. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
I remind everyone, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there, brought to you as usual by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Paul at 904-636-7888. And the question is, 93% of people who are clients of financial planner types expect that they will be served by that planner to some degree with their estate planning. What percent actually get that service? And we know that 6% is too low. So we got a bracket between 6 and 93. It's actually between 6 and 91. I just gave you those 2 points. We're in a good mood.
Okay. See? Thanks.
All right. What do you guys want to talk about? There's nothing really going on in the world.
Yeah. I have so much stuff.
I got stacks of it. Joey, you got anything you want to?
Just one comment we had during the commercial break. We were talking about how, you know, the Michigan survey and how it seems like people's political biases are influencing whether they're perceiving the impact of tariffs on consumer goods as a price adjustment that's temporary or true inflation. And I think that might account for some of the gap.
Definitely.
That we're seeing. I think if you're on the right, you're more willing to accept that this is part of a bigger play. This is a temporary thing and we need to endure the pain to get to where we're trying to go. And if you're on the left, you think that you're more inclined to believe that this is a longer term impact that we're going to see to prices and they're not going to come back down and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, it depends what news you listen to also. There are things that the big three basically won't touch. Now, if that's where you get your news, you're not going to know anything.
I forgot I had this, but if this isn't a good example of the political bias in the news, I don't know what is, because the CPI report came in at 0.2. That was month over month. Mm-hmm. Annual inflation at 2.3%, the lowest it's been since like 2020 or 2021. And what were two headlines that I found? The first was monthly inflation ticked up in early hints of tariff effects,
as demonstrated by
the lowest inflation in 5 years. The other one, and this was on MarketWatch, consumer prices show mild increase, but trade wars likely to add to inflation despite reduced tariffs.
Oh, they're soothsayers.
You can't argue that the CPI report was great news. Like, it was really a great report. These make it sound like it was a terrible report. And that first headline was in the Wall Street Journal, of all places.
Well, why do you think I canceled my Wall Street Journal subscription in the 80s? Because it was a liberal rag. If you take out the opinion page from the Wall Street Journal, all you've got is the Chicago Tribune. It's ridiculous. That, by the way, was an opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
What can I say? Joe, you got something you want to discuss, or shall we just start chatting?
I think one thing I wanted to bring up is just, I don't know if you could have a perfectly executed changing of your forecast for the major banks, like JP Morgan and otherwise.
Yeah, you got that.
They
right.
Marked the bottom when they cut the rates, and then immediately the market started coming back.
Yeah, that's true.
And if that's not a perfect example of why that's a bunch of baloney and that's not useful information for investors of any type.
No.
Then I don't know what is.
Yeah, they cut their price targets almost on the day the market bottomed out.
You've talked about other contrarian indicators. I'm now just going to wait for that headline and start buying that day.
Well, it's like the Nancy Pelosi stock picking theory. You go with her, but if you do the Cramer system, you just do the opposite.
That's right. Somebody needs to make an anti-Cramer ETF.
Oh, they got it.
Oh, yeah. There is?
It exists, yeah.
All right, beat me to it, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing with so many people messing around in the arenas that we work in. If you can think about it, somebody's probably already done it.
Wow.
Also, speaking of opinions, Florida claimed the number 6 spot in the U.S. News Best States ranking. But there was some objective facts behind that. We ranked highest in economy out of all 50 states.
Wow.
And second in education. And that is one of the reasons Florida continues to grow like it has, because we are high in two of the most important of the categories. A lot of the other categories are, in my opinion, very subjective. But those two, you can look at the numbers.
That's what happens when you hire good help.
Which yeah. parts of education? Did it break down what was...
A lot of it's driven by our university systems.
Yeah, universities are good.
Yeah, being ranked so high. We have four of the top 25 public universities in the country located in Florida. Yes. So
there's been some house cleaning in the administration of some of the universities, too. People that are holding back quality education, and they just aren't there anymore. One of the things I really like about DeSantis is that he's not afraid to just try something. If he thinks it needs doing, he'll do it. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, try something else. I go back to the old expression that says, when the only situation that's untenable is the status quo, do something.
So within the education system, Florida has the lowest average in-state tuition and fees at $4,613. Wow. And graduation rates that are among the highest in the U.S., 74.3% for four-year institutions and 62.9% for two-year programs. That's second in the U.S. in both of those metrics.
All right, here's one that says, I told you so. Social Security started issuing larger payments in April. Do you guys remember why?
In April?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was it the COLA or I don't know.
No, it was the repeal of the double dipping rules. There were two kinds of them. In other words, they started, and I reported on this before.
Yeah, they're paying people that didn't ever qualify.
Yeah. You didn't put in enough time to get payments? We'll fix that. We'll give you the payment anyway.
So these are really? People who did not have 40 quarters of eligible work.
Yeah, because they worked in other jobs.
Yeah.
And they were accruing pensions on their other jobs. So due to the non-double dipping law, it took two payments to equal what they would have gotten from one. But now they get one whole one and one other one.
It's a very
you're trying to save the system?
Subset of people, though. I mean, this can't be a huge number.
I don't care if it's 50 cents.
Yeah.
You can't save something by spending more money if it's going broke. And every proposal I see from every brilliant person out there is to spend more money, raise benefits. I haven't seen anybody come up with any way to do this. And here's the proof. I warned you all on air several times that this was going to happen. And now it's there and it's showing, which means that the 2034 drop dead date for your Social Security benefits is now getting a little closer than it used to be. That's nuts, people. It's totally nuts. All right, I'm going to ask you guys a question. There is a school of thought out there now which extends to some pretty smart people that I admire quite a bit. And it says, spend your IRA money and leave your other money to your estate. I think it's pretty simple to understand the theory.
Yep.
What do you think?
I think it depends, like most of these things. There are specific reasons why that would make sense. And there are reasons not to do that strategy. But if we can assume that the tax law gets made permanent or gets another 10 years at least, getting money out of tax-deferred accounts at historically low tax rates makes a lot of sense. This plan also seems to rely on you wanting to make things better for your heirs, which that's not everyone's primary motivation. Most people...
You wish it were mine, I'll bet.
No. Just kidding. But most people are more selfish than that. They're not just doing things to plan for their heirs having a better quality of life, especially if they've already raised them and gotten to a point where they're self-sustaining and... Then they're just giving them a big gift at the end of their life. It doesn't have to be optimized for them.
No, those are the same people that co-sign their kids' school loans.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a time, people, when being nice is one thing, but being too nice is quite another thing, and it can cost you. But I think the overriding theory here, and all three of us in this room practice this every day, We like to see people with pots of money in different arenas, taxable IRAs, non-taxable IRAs, and outside of IRAs, so that you have a flexible withdrawal capability for the rest of your life, so you can manage your income, which means manage your taxes, which means eventually optimizing your ability to live to a ripe old age and not run out of money, which is, of course, the number one fear of Americans everywhere. They don't want to be a burden on anybody. They don't want to run out of money. And it's been proven all the years of my life. I have seen survey after survey after survey saying that the only thing that people fear more than death itself is running out of money. So that said, you got to find a way to manage your own rest of your life cash flow. That's the way I look at it.
Think about this. What's the most hated tax in America? I talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
I was about to go there.
Yeah.
Yep.
What if I approached a client and said, I want you to jump up two IRMA brackets so that your kids will pay slightly less taxes when they inherit this large sum of money you're going to leave them. How do you think that's going to go over?
Well, I'd fire you from my family's last name. For those of you who don't know, IRMA is the income-related monthly adjustment amounts, which are added onto your Social Security payments, or actually taken away from your Social Security payments, because the Medicare Part B and Part D is increased, and it is nothing more than an income tax. And I have spoken to people at the IRS and at Social Security who eventually wound up just telling me the point-blank truth. It's just an income tax. It's another way to hide. You think your marginal tax rate is 22%? Come on in and talk to us for a while and bring all your paperwork. There's a lot of you who are paying a lot more than that and probably don't know it. So another essential part of financial planning is planning IRMA, because it's brackets, but they're not the same as tax brackets. Did you know that capital gains brackets aren't the same as tax brackets either?
Nope, not even close.
There's a lot of brackets going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so confusing.
But there is, in front of Congress, a bill to change that, and I hope it goes through. It makes sense. All right, we've got to take another short break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I want to remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. The trivia question is still out there. Although 93% of clients of financial planners expect estate tax services to be included with the package. How many actually get it? We know that 6 is too low, 6%. I wish you all could have heard the discussion going around the table here in the break. We're talking about the whole concept of selling your IRAs so that your kids don't have to take the money out of them over 10 years, which you can inherit a stepped-up basis on funds outside of a IRA in general, or you can inherit a Roth, but you still have to take the money out, but there's no tax on it. And there are a couple big hitters. I say probably the premier IRA guy in the country that I'm aware of is a guy named Ed Slott. I have subscribed to a Slott newsletter for as long as I can remember, literally, maybe even before I got to CFP. And Slott is all over this thing. And the other guy, who is a financially oriented guy, but that's not his profession, and everybody knows him around. He's our own local consumer warrior. Clark Howard is all over it, agreeing with Slott. And I disagree. And we all three disagreed for most people, not for everybody. But if you're a typical millionaire next door type, meaning, yes, you have $1 million here and there, like you add up your Roth IRA, your 401k, and all that stuff, and you have a net worth of $1 million. Now, why would you think that you could safely start pulling all that money out at current tax rates, which I know they're lower than they might be, but they're probably not going to change much for a while either, just so that your kids could inherit regular money instead of the IRA money, which is just nuts to me. There's a fine line between being nice and being too nice. And I've seen it, Adam's seen it, Joey's seen it, I'm sure, that there are people around who have done really dumb things because they thought it would be good for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cautionary tale that we tell everybody, just be careful. Remember who's number one.
Yep.
And it'll be harder to make a mistake.
I think that there is a sweet spot where that plan makes a lot of sense. If you mm-hmm. retire at 65, you don't, or let's say 60, you're not even on Medicare yet. Right. And you go from making $400,000 a year down to almost nothing. And you've got a big IRA and you've got after-tax money and you're deciding how you want to fund your life. You should absolutely fill up the 10 and 12% tax brackets with IRA money. And that's just a no-brainer, whether it's taking that money to live off of or doing Roth conversions. I would 100% say that makes sense. When you get to 22%, probably still makes sense, but going to require some more analysis until you get to 65. Then you're looking at IRMA tax charges being generated by your income. And so you need to have a little more thought put into it and a little more careful planning. And so that's a very specific set of circumstances that doesn't apply to 90% of America. So just these blanket things that say you should do this it's kind of irresponsible in my opinion.
That's the problem with blanket statements about finance.
Yeah, they don't work. No. I mean, they're helpful if you're on ground zero. Like Dave Ramsey, I love that he helps such a large amount of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you get into the details, you know, you can drive me nuts because I'm a dork about finance. There's so much nuance that's left off the table. But it's, you know, the seven steps or whatever that gets people out of the hole that they're in.
But
it only gets you out of the hole, right?
Certain
if you want to move on from there.
There are certain things that we can all agree on. And I'm debt-free would be one of those.
Right.
And that's where Dave shines among all the people. But there are a couple other irrefutable portions of learning about money. One, more money, better than less money. That's the first thing you ever learn. And money sooner is better than money later. That's the second thing you learn about it. All that's true. But what does that have to do with tax planning? Very, very little.
And if you just look at it from the other side, I mean, what percentage of inheritors of any amount of money in an IRA from their parents is going to be like, daggone it, why didn't they do a darn Roth conversion? You know, I mean, that's just not how people are going to think about it.
It's not.
The other
part portion.
Over half of the kids are just going to spend it all the first day anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Show me how many people have large inherited IRAs and how many have great big flashy shiny new pickup trucks.
Yeah, I was going to say that was done as soon as hospice got involved. The pickup truck was already bought.
People start spending it before it's there.
For sure.
We have seen some of those too. I'll tell you, folks, if we could tell stories, we could sit here until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning and just tell you stories about people we've met with, people who have done just stupid things. We could also tell you about some fantastic success stories.
Yes, definitely.
We've seen people come in who literally were at their wits' end. They did not know what to do or how to do it, and they were snowballing out of control, and they knew it. And they came in, and we sat down and made plans with them. Some have been around now for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever years. And some of them have account balances that would impress anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Having gone from underwater deeply to where they are in so little time, it's hard to believe when you think about it. That's the value of financial planning. And that's why we all love what we do. And our clients seem to love it as well. That goes back to the trivia question. We do it all, basically, and people appreciate it. All right. How about this one? I love having you guys around because I can ask questions and get opinions for free. How many people do you think are going to start itemizing for taxes if this tax bill comes down the way it looks?
So if they change the SALT portion.
That's the key.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good amount of people in New Jersey, New York, California, Illinois that in a good amount. I mean, you're talking about it's people on the margin. So we're talking about like maybe 5% of the population of those states.
It's actually about 10% in what's her name? The congresswoman from New York that I like so much, Claudia, I can't remember, Tenney. She said this would affect about 10% of her constituents.
Okay.
And she is from a wealthy area.
Yeah.
And I think based on that, I think the people that are holding out in the Republican Party now for more than that, because they basically want to lift the lid on it, I think they're kind of off base. I want the system fixed. How many times have we talked about this? I want it indexed to inflation, doubled for the to eliminate the marriage penalty and all that. But these people just saying, well, we need $80,000 SALT deduction. Nobody comes home on that one.
Yeah.
You know, you got a few votes in a few states that aren't going to vote the right way anyway.
Yeah. I mean, in general, that's what we always say about the, regardless of what specific topic about the tax code that we're talking about, our big thing is that we want it to be fair. If you get married, you shouldn't be penalized. You should get a double deduction for whatever that looks like. The bracket should be twice as big for married people. It just should be fair. There shouldn't be penalties that are arbitrarily imposed by Congress to enact a certain behavior or to generate excess revenue because you made a lifestyle choice.
Yep. And that's the way I feel about it, too. How about this one? No tax on Social Security benefits, period.
I just don't see how it's possible.
Joe, you got an opinion?
I'm kind of with Adam. I mean, in principle, it makes sense. This is money that you were taxed in the first place,
yeah,
you know,
agreed.
More than once. But if you look at it in the context of the budget issues, I don't know how you pull that off.
How about if we were to de-Clintonize it? That means the 85%, right?
Yeah.
Go that way.
Well, that's or you greatly raise the limit on the 85.
Yeah.
It's at 44,000. Nobody pays less than 85%. Yeah. I mean, almost nobody.
You know, index the darn tax code. Do you know why capital gains brackets are not the same as tax brackets? Because they're not indexed.
Right.
Index for inflation or don't.
And use the same inflation rate for all of your indexing. Don't arbitrarily.
I've written articles on this. I've spent hours on air complaining about it. And they just they somehow seem genetically incapable of doing the right thing. Maybe that's why they're in Congress.
The government comes out and says, like, inflation was 5% this year, so we're going to give you a 2% raise on your Social Security.
They'll come in, pick and choose. Then they'll come in with your tax bracket and up at 5.8.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense either.
It doesn't.
If we're trying to get the finances of this country back under control, it would be nice to interject some logic into this thing, wouldn't
agreed.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like they're trying to, it's like every year someone gets OCD about something that looks kind of like a round number, but it's like, who cares? Like, none of this makes any sense anyway. Just let it go all the way and let us figure it out.
Have you ever known anybody who paid a CPA to calculate how much tax they're going to pay?
No, it's income. Calculate income.
Yeah, you pay the CPA to tell you how much taxable income you've got, and you plug it into a computer, and bang, here's your number.
Yep.
So people have a very, very strange attitude about all of this, in my opinion. All right, let's talk. 93% of clients of financial planners expect that the people will offer some guidance and help with estate planning. And they don't get it, for the most part. 22% say that they actually do get services from their financial planners.
And I would bet a lot of financial planners say they do that, and all they're doing is saying, hey, do you have a beneficiary on this account?
Well,
which is not estate planning.
That's step one.
Right. It's a good step. It's better than nothing,
yeah.
But it's definitely not estate planning.
No. And to me, you can't really be a comprehensive planner unless you dig into that kind of thing. And you can't really know enough about your client unless you dig into that either. So those of you who are among the disappointed 70%, whatever it is, perhaps you should shop around. I have an idea. Call 904-685-1505 or go online. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening. This has been a lot of fun. This is the Ben.